This is the Maritime Cybersecurity Insight, a podcast that gives you insight into the latest maritime cybersecurity trends through the voices of the industry leaders. This program is brought to you by Class NK.
Thanks everyone for joining us today. My name is Maki Kotani from Class NK Cybersecurity Team. In the last three episodes, namely the episode one, the coffee break session, and the special session from Sea Japan 2022, we've discussed what we can expect from information sharing of cybersecurity threats. And one of the key takeaways from these episodes was the more we cooperate, the better the cybersecurity posture of the entire maritime community is supposed to be. But in this complex maritime business ecosystem, are we really familiar with the cybersecurity challenges of different stakeholders or the initiatives they're undertaking? From this episode then, I'll sit with the leaders of the industry representing various maritime stakeholders and explore these topics.
Joining me today is Henning Schleierbach. He's the Chief Operating Officer at Digital Container Shipping Association, also known as DCSA. He's here to chat with me about the mission and goals of DCSA and the associated cybersecurity challenges he sees that comes along with the digitalization of global shipping. Henning, I just want to say thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Maki, for having me. So, appreciate that.
Henning, before we dive into the cybersecurity topic, why don't you give us a little bit of background about DCSA and its mission for your audience?
Yeah, happy to do that. So the DCSA has been founded more or less exactly 3 years ago. So we are recording today on the 13th, the 12th of April. We were founded in Amsterdam, and we have nine of the top 10 container carriers as our members. And they in total represent about 70% of the world's containerized trade. DCSA aims to further the digitization of global logistics, and in particular, the part of the container shipping industry. We are neutral and non-for-profit, and our standards are published open source. So we believe that standards can only play out their benefit if they are widely used. And that means we are really interested in reaching that and enabling the industry to transform successfully.
I see. I mean, first of all, congrats for the association's third anniversary. And so regardless of the current membership, the goal for DCSA is to, you know, pave the path of digitalization of global logistics. And I also learned from DCSA's documents that the approach to do that is basically through standardization, which is open to any parties widely across the value chain. Now, Henning, among many projects at DCSA, what is the main area of focus of digitalization for the users of DCSA standards?
Yeah, so we cover a range of four different products, and those are supply chain visibility, which is very important for the shippers, digital trade, so getting rid of paper documents that we still see a lot. It's also about predictable operations. That's how do we stay on time in our schedules? How do we publish proper scheduled data? And last but not least, maritime cybersecurity. So those are in our focus, and our focus is on system-to-system interoperability. We believe if you want to connect large multinational entities efficiently, you cannot use apps or websites. So this is what we've seen in B2C digital transformation. But you need to get their systems to talk to each other. And that requires standards that are secure, practical in their application, and widely used.
I agree. You know, API is the foundation of maritime business on forward in a way that, you know, we all want to achieve efficient and optimized seaborne transformation services. While every player wishes to continue to have their own systems running that fit to work for their own needs, right? Now, Henning, aside from these, streamlining the current business processes, what values do you foresee can emerge from the digitalization of container shipping?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's take our e-documentation initiative, for example. Today in the industry, we're still flying documents of title around the globe to enable trade finance and trading of goods that are currently on board. So in the end, if you hold the original bill of lading, you are owning the cargo while it's on the way. This is the purpose of the document. But with an EBL, with an electronic representation of the document, that will be a lot faster, simpler and cheaper. Our estimates are that we can save annually for the industry around about $4 billion with just 50% adoption rate. And we also think that this should be possible to reach by the year of 2030. So if you look at the e-airway bill in aviation, it took them, I think, almost 20 years, but they have reached a wide level pushed through IATA of adoption right now. But the similar process in the shipping industry has not yet been successful. Our current adoption rates are around 1%, and that's far too little.
But if achieved, that would be a major impact, to the global trading systems. Now, towards the digitalization journey you mentioned, what is the main concern as regards to cybersecurity? What would you say would be the biggest cyber threats?
I think first and foremost, we need to look at our role as a standards body. So as a standards body, we want to ensure secure by design DCSA standards. And for us, that means defining the trade-off between confidentiality, integrity, and availability for these interfaces from the beginning and really design it into the interfaces and the standards. As successful standards, which in our view is an adopted or widely adopted standard, is also some type of a monoculture. And that means we need to protect our adopters from being hacked. Imagine if you have multiple parties in an industry that all operate in a similar way, which is the purpose of a standard, and it is not secure, it is an easy attack and big attack surface for potential hackers. And that would, of course, be a disaster for us to see that adopters are being attacked through an insecure standard. So this is our core focus and also the biggest threat we are seeing.
It's important that those basic functionalities that support cybersecurity operations need to be widely and consistently implemented through standards. But we also need to remind that there's no silver bullet for cybersecurity. Cyber risks change in time, so do your company's risk appetite, and hence the control measures you need changes as well, right? And the fact that the word baseline is used in cybersecurity instead of the word like minimum rule or minimum standard, I think it illustrates this important principle as well.
Yeah, I think that's also very right. So we talk a lot about we talk about minimum standards, but calling it baseline, I think, is fine as well. If you look at EDI, which is today widely used, you would probably say that the baseline should be that you use secure FTP to send it around. But I just learned on our workshop last month in Amsterdam that also that is not the case, because some of the other parties cannot do it. So the carriers can all, of course, receive data in a secure FTP format. But if some of your partners cannot, you are sending it openly over the internet. And I think we are all aware of the risk that this holds.
Now, DCSA is quite active, right, in addressing cybersecurity issues, as is obvious now. And can you briefly elaborate the specific function within your organization that work on that matters? What are their main activities?
Yeah, of course. For our products or work streams, we have a team of dedicated DCSA individuals. So they could be our own employees or contractors that we put full time on a project. And then we second them with a group of subject matter experts from our members. And that's usually a size of, let's say between 10 and 20 people that are active in the field or may come in just for one specific topic. You can imagine that you need legal experts for e-documentation. And for cybersecurity, you may need OT experts or you may just need API experts. So we just pull them in wherever we need them. And this group defines the scope and the priorities we are working on based on the expected value that they are seeing. And then they provide input and feedback. So usually our team is let's say writing the concept papers, but we need input and feedback. And in the end, we want to reach an aligned standard. So there's a sign-off process that we have. Our team of DCSA and our members is then committed to adopt and enhance the product as we learn using and applying it.
Impressive. Let's go back to the cybersecurity topic and correct me if I'm wrong, but if I try to, you know, categorize target areas that DCSA is working on to protect as regards to container shipping, may I say that they should be the information security of the trading processes that used to be closed within the extent of, you know, IT security? Then secondly comes in the need to protect the interface with the physical world, which is the IoT security that derives from the industry's needs for container tracking, monitoring, and controls. And aside from that, the vessel in which the containers are stored should also be cybersecure. Have I summarized that correctly?
I think you can say it like that. So we usually distinguish between landside and marine cybersecurity at DCSA. And as the landside is kind of covered okay-ish, I would say, our focus there is really on securing our own standards. So if somebody is using the interfaces that we publish, that should be safe and secure. Then we add the vessel, and on the vessel we look into configuration, procedures and people. What we see is the more secure you configure your vessel, the more the threat actors will shift to the weakest link in the chain, and that in many cases is the people element. That's what we see on the land side as well. So phishing or spear phishing are quite successful techniques, you need completely different mechanisms to protect your organization and your systems from these risks.
Speaking of vessel cybersecurity now, so you mentioned about your first publish of your security guideline was the vessel cybersecurity, right? And what made you decide to allocate a good amount of your resources on these guidelines?
In our maritime cybersecurity group, we focus on the vessel itself. So we have published our implementation guide for cybersecurity on vessels as one of our first publications in 2020. And that was, the purpose was to facilitate the vessel readiness according to the IMO resolution that just came out or was out when DCSA was founded. And it was top of mind of our members, in addition, that just had the experience of the Maersk cyber attack. And on our priorities, like you asked, so we decide them jointly with our members. So DCSA is fully membership funded. We are non-for-profit, so we can only work on topics that our members want us to work on. And cybersecurity is on our agenda since the launch in 2019. So it is an important field. And it's also something that you cannot really do individually or separately from the other ones. So you can't really detach it from the other work streams because they need to be secure. And if you then have the expertise in the group, you can use that that power to also work on some extra topics. And that's what we do.
And now, from your overall assessment of the stakeholders you represent, you know, what should be the area that should be improved foremost for better cybersecurity posture?
I think that's a very good question. And sometimes, I mean, we are a standards body, so sometimes it's good to look at frameworks that are existing. So threat actors are smart, and they are eager, and they have a strong motivation. So they always attack the weakest company, and in that, the easiest target. So could be the people on board of a vessel, which is very well configured. If we look at shipping connects global trade, and as well as it does this or enables global trade, shipping also everyone is connected. So what we say is if one is hit, all are hit, at least in the container world. So it could be that an attacked vessel is blocking a port, so you can't call the terminal, even if your own vessel is not attacked at all, or you're shipping in an alliance and you have your cargo on a partner vessel which is hit. So we need to secure the whole ecosystem. You cannot do it alone. If you do it alone, you leave big parts of your risk untackled. Yeah? So in our view, collaboration is the key to protect the industry, and it can only work jointly. So how can that be done? And here, I think it's good to take the NIST framework and just look at the individual stages. And if we take identify, for instance, as the first stage, of course, information sharing can help us to better understand the risks. Yeah? So if I see something which is happening, or if I identify a vulnerable component of hardware on board of my vessel, I should be talking about that because my peers may be affected and that can backfire. If we look at protect, this is in the end all about the setup, the procedures and the people. So you need to prepare and create the awareness and prepare your hardware and also the procedures on board of your vessel as well as possible. So you need to also do a cyber drill. So it needs to be top of mind of your staff. Detect, again, it's probably information sharing. I mean, what we see in the information sharing platforms that we use is that they share indicators of compromise and we can use those to detect an attack. And again, it's something that it's a piece of intel that if you share it, you can protect the industry better than if you don't. If we look at respond, there are for sure best practices that we can share. And this should not be a competitive advantage. It should rather be something that we use to strengthen the resilience of the industry. And we can support, we can also get support from peers in the response to an incident, and that is also, this has happened in the industry. So it's not that the entities which are hit are fighting alone against it. And last but not least, we have recover. So we believe you can recover faster if your peers understand the nature of the incident. Mm-hmm. And again, that's only something you can achieve if you share insights about the incident. And that means, for instance that certain interfaces can be switched on, I don't know, 1 or 2 or 3 days faster than if you are in doubt of what is actually happening at the other side.
I couldn't agree more. I like the saying, your security is only as strong as its weakest link, right? And Henning, you mentioned about information sharing, and our previous episodes explored the maritime platform for cyber incident information reporting and sharing. What is your thoughts on leveraging those, you know, in the industry's initiatives?
Yeah, first and foremost, I think they are very important and we need to support them as much as possible. So we know that threat actors collaborate and share in an anonymous way what worked for them. So we as potential targets need to do the same if we want to level up with them. However, sharing these sightings or vulnerabilities is not an easy step. If you take a traditional shipping line, which is in business since, I don't know, 150 or 200 years, it's not the first thing you do to let's say, turn your unpleasant learnings outside and share them with the world. So this requires trust, and trust is only built over time. You also need personal relations to say who you want to share with. So we and our members use MTS ISAC, the US-based system, and we certainly see value in it. But what I can also say is I would like to see more shares from our members and more engagement. So most of our members are currently in a consuming mode, which is a first step, and it is exactly there to build that trust. But I think it works best if you also give something back. So in the MTS ISAC, we have the daily shares. We have a platform where you can download indicators of compromise, just to mention a few features. And they also do webinars, which I enjoy actually a lot, where people talk about what happened in their company. And maybe this happened a year ago, but there is so much learning. I mean, how do you get support if you are hit? How good is your incident response plan working in real life? So there are so many learnings. And if we don't talk about those and use also the mistakes that we made during that process as an experience to become better, then we will not be able to protect ourselves in the long run.
Henning, what do you think can foster the culture of sharing cyber threat information among the maritime industry? What do you think can improve more?
In fact, I don't know what it can really be. What we are trying is we are trying to build trust and to also give backing to the ones who are sharing. Yeah? How can you create trust? I mean, we are still humans, so we believe bringing people together, being able to meet during a conference, maybe enter a room without windows, and have an exchange over under Chatham House rules. It's probably way more efficient, and you get a lot of out this compared to just a system where you enter your stuff and it will be there forever, or you kind of lose control of what happens with it. So that's certainly something we have to take into account. So do not ignore our nature of being humans. And also we need to embrace that cybersecurity experts are all a bit paranoid, say. So that is also important to, it's important to acknowledge that and give them a room or an environment where they feel comfortable to share. And the other part is the part with the backing. So what we have learned from our members is that one of the first things you get when you are hit is your legal team tells you that you're not allowed to talk to anybody outside your company about what is happening because of liability issues. Yeah. And that also makes a lot of sense. Huh? If it would be my company, I would probably go for something similar. Huh? So how can you now share information in a timely manner if you are under a legal ban and you are not allowed to talk to anybody outside? And we believe that is something that you have to prepare in a safe situation. So before you are hit, you need to come up with a white list, with a framework of things that you are allowed, and also a framework of people you are allowed to share. So what are you allowed to share with whom in the case of an incident? That's something we are also working on with our members. And I believe that can, in the best case, put you in a position where you feel comfortable of sharing it and then benefit from the responses. So you can either protect your peers from being hit from the same stuff, or you can get their support to recover faster, and both in the end is helping the industry.
Interesting. And looks like I found a really good topic to raise with my future guests representing other stakeholders. As DCSA, what do you expect the most as possible outcome from the threat information sharing and analysis?
I think it's important to understand that you cannot hide from a cyber attack. And we still have people in the maritime world that think this will work. Huh? So former Cisco CEO John Chambers once said, and it's widely known, there are only two types of companies, those that have been hacked and those who don't yet know that they have been hacked. So everyone is under attack continuously. Yeah, and most of the impact you can handle, and every once in a while, you cannot so well, let's say. I'm convinced that through information sharing, we can reduce the number of successful cyber attacks. And I was actually struggling with the word successful because it is, of course, bad from our perspective. But from the attacker, a successful cyber attack gets him into your system. Huh? Mm-hmm. So we can reduce that number. So we have that. We see that every day. But maybe we can reduce it by a couple of percent. Huh? And the other thing where intel sharing can help is that we can recover faster after an incident. And that's also not to underestimate. I think the Maersk was down 10 days, the estimated cost of the attack, what they published in the annual report, was around $300 million. So you can calculate how much it is worth if you can recover 1 or 2 days faster. It may not sound a lot, but it can be essential, and especially for these long-lasting outages. There's always a risk to really kill your whole business if it lasts too long. So a quick recover after an incident is absolutely essential, and everything that we can do, if we can make that 6 hours, half a day, 1 day, 2 days faster, it is extremely valuable. And how can that be done? So if your peers understand better what is happening, They may support you with insights. They may support you with expertise, and they will also be able to get their interfaces up. I mean, we need to acknowledge that we are living in a highly connected world. And the first thing that happens if you are under attack and that becomes public is that everybody cuts the lines. Yeah, and you don't get any data exchange anymore. You don't get emails. And you don't get any EDI or the API data streams. And that puts you in a quite isolated position. All your cargo is continuously flowing. I mean, you are a bit stuck in history from your system perspective. So in the recover process, it's extremely valuable to get these interfaces up fast and get the support of your peers.
This has been a fascinating conversation, but our time is running out. And then before we go, any final remarks to our audience?
Yeah, maybe one. I also think it's a fascinating area. I mean, it's just one of the four areas that we tackle at DCSA. But what is quite obvious for me is that we only have a few hundred maritime cyber experts globally. Yeah. So collaboration and openness is key to stay resilient. And I hope that we have some students listening into this podcast as well. So if you are up for an exciting job with great challenges and opportunities, go for it. Take a look. It's a very interesting field, and the opportunities will not go away.
Thanks, Henning. As someone who works in the maritime cybersecurity field, let me align myself with exactly what you just said. Maritime is such a rewarding career in that you can make a global impact. We wouldn't have those things we take for granted without international shipping. And you obviously see how it is meaningful to be engaged in protecting the seaborne trade from cyber risks. Everyone, that was Henning Schleierbach. He's COO at Digital Container Shipping Association. Thanks so much for joining me, and we'll talk again soon on another episode from Class NK.